Welcome to KBS World Radio, everyone. Thank you for joining us on Books on Demand, a show that introduces a treasure trove of Korean short stories to the global audiences. Today we introduce part two of the three-part series Out of the Blue by Yeom Sang-seop. I'm your host Karen Choi, and please stay tuned. The original title of Yeom Sang-seop's Out of the Blue was Graveyard. The story was published serially in a magazine called New Life under that title in 1922, but was discontinued along with the magazine. When the first issue of Shide Ilbo, or the Time Daily, was published in 1924, Yeom's story was again published under the new title, Manse-jeon, translated in English as Out of the Blue, before it was released in book form. Yinhwa was attending a liberal arts college in Tokyo in 1918, just a year before the March 1st movement began in Korea. He was on his way back to Korea upon hearing the news of his wife's impending death when he was subjected to all sorts of humiliation aboard a ship to Busan. A man presumed to be a police officer took him to a police station once they landed in Busan. Unlike the time I was questioned in Shimonoseki, once I stepped into the police station, I felt a sort of vague fear and anxiety wash over me so that my speech became slow and awkward. I privately scoffed at my cowardliness, yet realized that the way I spoke naturally became more polite and my attitude more compliant. Fortunately for Yinhwa, the questioning ended without an incident. While waiting for the train to Seoul, Yinhwa decided to see the sights of Busan.
Two-story houses stood on both sides of the street, but none of them seemed to belong to a Korean. After looking in all directions at a three-way junction, I stopped a passerby to ask where Koreans lived. He thought for a while before pointing to a narrow street leading to a beach in the south, where a few houses stood. I followed his direction. A narrow alley leading to the beach appeared as I walked out of a stinky back street. There was a two-story Japanese-style house, shoddy and haphazardly built. It didn't look like it belonged to a Korean, but those who went in and out of it were definitely Korean. It was clear, even at a glance, that it was a place of ill repute, commonly seen in a port area. I again walked out of the main street and checked different alleys, looking for a place to eat. I wanted a place where they sold kimchi, but I couldn't find a single Korean restaurant. Funny thing was that, in the small, cramped area, more than half of the people walking on the streets were Korean. I wondered where all these people go at night. At the same time, I couldn't help but worry about the fate of these poor people in white.
Yinhwa was shocked at the sight of Busan in 1918. He was further stunned when he talked with a waitress at a Japanese noodle shop. "I don't like Koreans even if I get paid in gold." The waitress's father was Japanese and her mother Korean. Here's literary critic Chun So-young to tell us more about Busan in 1918.
조선 땅에서의 첫 방문지인 부산에 도착했을 때 주인공은 깊이 탄식을 합니다.
When Yinhwa arrived in Busan, he was deeply disappointed at how all the buildings and streets were renovated into Japanese style. If you saw photos of Busan from back then, you'd realize that the city looked a lot like a Japanese city, illustrating the great changes Korea experienced. However, the more shocking thing was how much the Korean people's thinking changed. The protagonist met a waitress at a Japanese restaurant, who was from a Japanese-Korean family, yet she hated Koreans. She was denying her Korean identity. As the Japanese regime expanded its dominance over Korea, Every aspect of the Korean people, even their spirit, was changing.
되면서 조선인들의 모든 것이 그 마음마저도 변질되고 있는 상황이었습니다.
When the train arrived at Kimcheon Station, Yinhwa's older brother was waiting for him. She was almost at death's door when I sent that wire the other day, but she started getting better since that afternoon. By the time I left for here, the worst was over, but it's too soon to have hope. Inua's brother, a primary school teacher, was dressed in a cape and donned a cap with gold braids and even had a saber. Literary critic Chun So-young tells us about the Japanese imperial government's military rule.
Inhwa's brother is the face of the Japanese military rule in the 1910s. The reign of terror led by the military police was the main means of oppressing colony residents. Even teachers were made to dress up like soldiers. Photographs from back then show teachers wearing military uniforms and carrying long sabers. Students must have feared and obeyed armed teachers. That was what military rule meant. The ruling class used their authority to take away people's right to assemble or freedom of the press and association. Such violent persecution caused anger and hatred to build up in the hearts of the Korean people.
이런 폭력이 자행되었는데 그러다 보니까 조선인들의 마음속에서도 조금씩 분노가 자라기 시작한 것입니다.
Inhwa's brother was excited about soaring real estate price and sorry to see Inhwa studying literature, a useless subject for the real world. I couldn't tell you before, but you now have a new sister-in-law. Apparently, the older brother paid for a young lady from a ruined family to marry him and bear him a son.
I will go up to Seoul a few days later, but tell father that the grave issue will take another 4 or 5 days to resolve. I think we'll have to follow the graveyard rules. It sounded strange to my ears. My wife was sure to die soon, but my father worrying about the hole in the ground where he will be buried even before he's dead seemed a pointless endeavor for an idle man. Is he worried that I wouldn't find a gravesite for him? Why should he care whether I choose cremation or burial at sea? Father must be concerned about such things, but it's useless to worry about it in this hard and busy world. What do you mean useless? The government general legislated the graveyard laws, so we have to follow him whether we like it or not. And what do you want to do if our family plot is sold to someone else, when we have parents who don't have many years left? What are you going to do when something bad happens to them? Are you going to bury them in a public cemetery? You're not fulfilling your duty as a son, and you will end up humiliating our family. When your wife meets an unfortunate end, she will be given a small spot inside our plot. The family should not be scattered all over the place. The grave issue referred to their cousin forging documents and selling the family plot, except for 2 burial sites, to pay off his gambling debt. There must be a way to take it back, right? Although I scoffed at their obsession over the burial sites, I was actually infuriated at my cousin for selling our family plot.
Literary critic Chun So-young explains more about the public cemetery system of the Japanese colonial government.
The Japanese colonial government revised the cemetery regulations in 1912. Except for a few special cases, all graveyards would be turned into public cemeteries overseen by local government bodies. The Japanese authorities meant to promote public hygiene and a more efficient use of land. But such measure stood in conflict with the Korean customs of revering ancestors and caring for their burial sites. This story was cited as an icon of literary realism at the time, which portrayed in precise detail the reality of living under colonial rule.
저는 당대 리얼리즘 대표작으로 언급이 되기도 하는데 그런 만큼 식민지 현실을 좀 선명하고 구체적으로 담아내고 있습니다.
Inhwa got on a train to Seoul that evening. A man in his 30s, seemingly from a rural village, sat across from him. He asked for a light, an excuse to start a conversation. Which school are you studying at? You came from Japan, right? The man smiled at the gold badge peeking out from underneath the coat. He stared at me with envy, since Korean students studying in Japan were considered the pioneers of the new era and new knowledge, especially after Japan's annexation of Korea. He wanted to ask me all sorts of questions, but he seemed to hesitate, afraid of what he might hear. Iina asked the man who introduced himself as a hat maker why he didn't shave his head.
It's a hassle, and it costs a lot to shave the head in a rural village. Also, once you shave your head, you have to know how to speak Japanese and study new subjects. Oftentimes, it becomes more troublesome if you have a shaved head but can't speak in Japanese when you go to the government office or meet a Japanese police officer. It's much easier if I keep my hair and wear a mangun headband like this, because they generally let me off the hook, calling me disparagingly as yobo. But don't they despise you a little less if you shaved your head? How long are you going to be belittled and called yobo? Being treated badly or called yobo doesn't affect me much, but shaving the head and wearing a hat would. You're harassed everywhere you go, and you get slapped sometimes and even get to see the inside of a jail once or twice a month. Being shunned is better than being beaten. How true. If you're crazy, silly antics can make them laugh. You could at least avoid being persecuted. Fear, caution, pretense, submission, subjugation. Avoiding all this is the most helpful and wise survival plan for a Korean person. Frankly, we didn't come to realize such life philosophy just now. Our lives now consisted of burrowing deeper into the thick, hardened skin formed under the long-standing feudalism and bureaucratic dictatorship.
The train arrived in Daejeon just past midnight. Iina got off the train to get some fresh air. People were gathered around a stove in the middle of an empty field, unprotected from the falling snow. Next to the stove were five people in shackles, shivering and perched on a wooden bench. I noticed three police officers standing guard over them. Among the bound people was a young woman with disheveled hair and dirty clothing, carrying a baby on her back. Having never seen a woman like that, my heart skipped a beat, and I stood there dumbfounded. I stared at her for a long time, confused as if I had just woken up from a nightmare before turning away. They should have untied her so that she could nurse the baby. Iina felt miserable for no good reason. Is this living? I hope they all die.
It's a grave. A grave crawling with maggots. The dim lamplight inside the train shone over the crouched people's heads, but it rather seemed to be pressing down on them silently. It's the public cemetery. These pathetic people worry that they will go in the public cemetery even when they are living in a public cemetery now. Maggots are crawling all over the graves. Everyone is a maggot. You are a maggot. I'm a maggot. But even then, the evolutionary stages would go on without skipping a beat. There is survival of the fittest and natural selection. They will fight over who is better. But the maggots will soon disintegrate and become elements and dust to enter my mouth and your nose. And when you and I die, we will soon become maggots to become elements and dust. Just die. Disappear. Go to rot. Once it's decided one way or the other, maybe someone a little useful would come out of it.
Previously disinterested in the predicament of Joseon, Iina comes face to face with the awful reality of his people. What would he do now? Here's Bang Min-ho, professor of Korean literature at Seoul National University, explaining why reality was likened to a graveyard.
염상섭 작가의 정말 치열한 작가이시.
The part where Joseon is described as a graveyard crawling with maggots is where Yeom Sang-sub fiercely criticized reality. But he also added that the world is a place where only the strongest survive, and the Korean people are ruled by the principle of the survival of the fittest. But Lee In-hwa wants to break this principle. That is, once the maggots die and become dust, they can help generate new life. Lee In-hwa, in this graveyard scene, condemns the real-life situation he is in and wishes for a new reality.
동시에 새로운 현실에 대한 염원을 바로 이 공동묘지 장면에서 이야기하고 있다고도 읽을 수가 있습니다.
Thank you for tuning in to Books on Demand. This week's episode was part 2 of Out of the Blue by Yeom Sang-sub. This has been Karen Choi, and please join me again next week.